Verses 1 to 17, and that's found on page 1083 in the Church Bibles. I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, and I will remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not remain in me, he is like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up and thrown into the fire and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be given to you. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. If you obey my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have obeyed my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends. For everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you to go and bear fruit. Fruit that will last. Then the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. This is my command: love each other. Thanks be to God. So, good morning. I personally love it that Jesus chose to speak to us in telling stories. In fact, Jesus being a storyteller was my legitimate excuse for being what some people think is an illegitimate profession of being an actor, which I was for very many years. And I love that story, the way Jesus uses metaphor and allegory and story to leak deep truths of who God is to us in such an invitational way, because he doesn't lecture us, does he? He invites us, and these stories, as we grapple with them, as we try and work out what he means through story, we're invited into that grappling process. Oh, to be as sure as this little girl. A six-year-old girl was drawing a picture one day. Her teacher said, "What are you drawing?" The little girl said, "I'm drawing a picture of God." The teacher was surprised and said, "But nobody knows what God is like." The little girl carried on drawing and replied, "They will in a minute." But for the rest of us who are grappling with who God is, we have this image, this incredible metaphor, this allegory of the vine, the gardener, and the branches. Sometimes, if we've been around church for a long time, these images can become so over familiar to us, they kind of lose their We lose the imagery. We lose the connection with it. So why the vine? I'm going to get a little bit horticultural on you now because I've done a little bit of research. I'm very relieved that Ian isn't here because I'm sure he can correct me afterwards, our true gardener. But I did do a little bit of research, and it's true that Jesus used examples that his listeners would understand. You know, that's a good storyteller, isn't it? You use things that people are tangible to. So maybe that's why he used the vine. But here's a few interesting facts that I learned about the vine. So they produce fruit every year. Well, that's quite encouraging, isn't it? It's a nice part of the analogy. They are the most fruitful of all fruit-growing plants. Encouraging. Again, that's good. They need to be heavily pruned thoroughly every year to be successful. That's what we don't like, isn't it? But we'll come to pruning later. But perhaps as we're talking about the vine, it's just a few thoughts to consider as to why he specifically chose the vine. But what I really want to explore today is the concept of being in something. If we are in the vine, in Jesus, let's just take a minute to consider some of the things that we are in. We are all in things. We are in this church, both physically and as part of the body of Christ. We are in families of origin, for good and for bad. We are in relationships. We're in schools. We're in companies we work in. We're in book clubs or prayer groups and social groups. There are values that come from being in those things. So just think for a moment about some of the things you are in. The values that those things hold, the identity it gives you of being in a certain workplace or from a certain school or family or social group. Sometimes we can feel very much out of things, and that has issues of its own. While you're thinking about the things you are in and how they affect you, I'm just going to remind you of an example that Kate used last week in an analogy in her talk, her brilliant talk, as they say in my business, follow that. Anyway, the example she used was about the gap that sometimes exists between our identity and how we actually live. And the example was the story of a child who had grown up in an abusive home and had become adopted. And this was a good thing. Unfortunately, they still lived in the same house. And so the analogy was that they were still living out of broken thinking and damage, even though change had come, and not actually living in the new identity. So then this concept of living in Jesus, what does it really mean for us? We all want to be fruitful, right? Sometimes it feels like the world is obsessed with being fruitful. Perhaps we could question fruitful in what? I don't know. But there seems to be an inspirational Instagram post or a workshop or an app even to make you the most fruitful you could possibly be. A lot of it might be financially motivated, but there is also a hunger for people to be fruitful in both their work lives and in their relationships. So what does Jesus say about the fruit in this passage? Well, he talks about love being the fruit. I think we often think of fruit as our productivity, even in the kingdom, or the fruits of the Spirit, all of them. But Jesus focuses almost entirely here on love being the fruit, abiding in his love and love being the fruit in us. If that's all you remember today, I think that's it. Abiding in his love and love being the fruit. Now, we know that that love will take different expressions in our different lives, in our different jobs, in our different relationships, in our different spheres of influence. But love will be the fruit that comes from the source. We cannot cultivate it on our own. We're not meant to, that is clear. Our job is only to remain. So how do we do that? Or how do we get better at that? If that's our job, if remaining in him and remaining and abiding in his love is our job, how do we do that? With all our multiple distractions and commitments, if it all comes down to this, this warrants our attention. It sounds like a really good deal to me. So the thing is, we get to remain. We get to absorb all the nutrients, all the nurture, all the care. Our job is to remain, and then we're fruitful. So why do we find it so hard? Why do we think it's down to us? Why is our tendency to try and be fruitful on our own? What does abiding look like? And what is our practice in abiding? Every year, me and my little family go to New Wine, and I love it because God unravels me every year in a field. It's something to do with the camping and not having as much makeup on or not being able to wash as much. But those of you who've done Focus and New Wine, there's a process of unraveling that I really enjoy. And I get discombobulated in a field every year. Last year, John Mark Comer spoke to us every day about our practice. It sounds a little bit Buddhist, doesn't it? Our practice. But he was breaking through some of those Christian familiarities and not looking at our thinking, our theology, our practice. Not concepts. How do you actually live? And he spoke about many different things, mainly the Sabbath, actually. I commend those talks to you if you look them up from New Wine. John Mark Comer, very good. But he talked about what does how you live say about what you believe? Not what you think you believe, but what you actually believe. And as a 40-something, I'm kind of done with the kind of pontifications and the best interpretation of scripture and who's the most intellectual. I'm interested in how we live. I'm interested in our practice. It can be useful because we do need to tease out our thinking. That's what we're doing today. But we have to look at how we actually live. What is our practice? And if I'm honest, that's why I admired Trevor so very much, because he lived out that faith so truthfully in his life. So where did you get to on your thoughts of the things you are in? Your pub quiz group, your football team, your school, your job, the identity, the values that those things give you. Is it a safe environment? Is it a dog-eat-dog environment? What are the effects on you from being in that environment, in that group? I went to boarding school, which was actually a good thing for me, which I won't go into. However, the identity of being in that school, I was at the Royal Ballet School up in the park there, it gave me certain identities and qualities that I didn't really understand until much later in life, as is so often the case in our formative years. Dancers have a crazy nuts work ethic. They liken a ballet training to being in the army, and I can verify that. It's very physical, it's very hard work, and you get on with it whether you are sick or in pain or not. It makes you very tough and resilient. And those are good things. But being away from home and an environment of day-to-day support makes you fiercely independent. You do not ask for help because there isn't any. So you can't get any help with your homework or mending anything or organizing yourself or the emotional ups and downs. There's nothing there. We regularly performed at the Opera House, and we just had to get all our own stuff organized, like we were working, little workers. So those of you who have or have had teenagers in your house know that occasionally they need reminded of things, you know, like the basics, like to wash, or their PE kit, or their phone, or, you know, just a few things. And my children are just coming into that sort of zone. And I'm reminded daily, obviously I support them, I give them the support that they need, not too much, because I'm training them for independence. But I'm aware every day of that independence that I had from a very young age, because I was away at school full time. When I became a Christian, when I was 15, I didn't know the lifelong relearning I would do in this aspect of my Christian faith. To learn to change my very thinking and identity and belief that it's down to me, that I'm on my own. To live in Jesus, to have that life source, that support, that creative energy, that nurturing, that love that is a constant and always available. For me, it was incredibly counterculture and literally like living on a new planet. I am still learning and relearning this concept and how to live out of it right now. I was talking to Kate Patterson recently about this, and she said, but Emma, that's all of us. Boarding school or not. We all have this tendency to think we have to do it on our own. It is, if you like, our fundamental flaw. Either through misunderstanding or through pride, we think we should get on with it, be fruitful, with hard work, grit, and perhaps the latest app in fruitfulness. Learning to abide, to remain in him, how do we do that and get better at it? Recently, at the Women's Day, we all shared stories and ways that we all connected to God daily. And it's so useful, isn't it, to hear different people's approaches and how to do that, whether it's through connecting with nature or walking or Bible notes or worship or podcasts, bringing us back to the source, letting us hear his voice above all else, washing ourselves in his love and in worshipping him, reading those truths that wash over our thinking. It prunes our thinking and brings us back to an environment, to the source. Maybe you can relate to the survival mentality I spoke about of my boarding school years, but maybe it was produced in you in very different circumstances. The truth is, Kate's right, it is a universal issue. And we have to rethink our thinking. We have to re-examine our thinking and grapple with this allegory of what it actually means to live in Jesus, in practice, in our lives. We all know what it's like to live in things, families, groups. But we need to challenge some of the values that we might have absorbed in these environments, as I had to with the example of boarding school. So we're going to come into the land with the popular subject of pruning. So, you know, you run into people and you say, how are you? And they say, I'm in a season of pruning, and it's a disaster. The truth is, we will all regularly be pruned if we want to be fruitful. And Ian's not here to verify this from proper gardening analogies. I'm a terrible gardener. Everything that I try and grow dies. But the pruning analogy is that pruning is practical, not personal. As we heard in the message, that branch is withered, it's gone, it just needs dealt with. It's practical. If we want to grow, we just need to get rid of the old wood. Listen to this to encourage you on proper pruning. When it comes to pruning grapes, the most common mistake people make is not pruning hard enough. Light pruning does not promote adequate fruit, whereas heavy pruning provides the greatest quality of grapes. Knowing how to prune can make the difference between a good and a bad crop. When pruning, you cut off as much of the old wood as possible. This will encourage the growth of new wood, which is where the fruit is produced. And remember, a vine gets pruned every year. That all makes us want to go, yeah, I'm being pruned, right? Instead of, oh, I'm being pruned. So it's good in the analogy that God is the gardener, because he does know how to prune, thankfully. And we want to get rid of the things that aren't working, the thinking that isn't serving us, that isn't of God. We want to get rid of it. Recently, Ed and I moved house. We'd lived in our house for 15 years. There was quite a lot of metaphorical old wood in our loft. My mum had moved several times in that period of time, and she just handed me a suitcase of belongings of my childhood that I really wasn't interested in going through, and they just went in the loft. You know, I mean, who has time for jobs like that when you've got young children? Several suitcases just up in the loft to be ignored until a later date. And, you know, clearing out that old wood was quite a job, having it been left for quite some time. And I think I have an image of some of you who come and helped us move. Moving some of that stuff, you might have wished we'd pruned a bit more heavily, a bit sooner. But I'm talking here about our thinking, our beliefs, and what we live out from. What are those beliefs? Our wonderful friends, Sheena and Roger, were talking to Ed and I about this just this week. It's really important to identify what the beliefs are, and if they are skewed, to bring them into the revelation of God and to have healing in our thinking. A very good friend of mine knew that I was talking about this passage, and he kindly sent me a podcast after I'd written my talk. And that's always helpful, isn't it? And just to make you feel good about what you're saying. And it was from Bethel, and the quite well-known, averagely well-known Bill Johnson talking on this passage. I commend it to you. It was great to listen to it afterwards. I can't do justice to everything that he said. It's very deep. It's very good. If you go to the podcast, it's called Abide and Listen. It's really good. Better than this. But he talks about the pruning being our thinking. And he talks about the voice of God being the voice of God that brought matter into being, being the voice of God that does the pruning. And I love that image, that it's the voice of God that does the pruning. The voice of God that brings things into being. It's that same voice that does the pruning in our thinking, where we've just gone off on a tangent, where we've just misunderstood who he is. He just prunes us with that voice that brings things into being and corrects things. I love that image. But do listen to the whole talk. It's brilliant. So maybe you can relate to the survival mentality I was talking about earlier, or you feel like you are or have been being heavily pruned, or maybe the concept of living in this source of love is completely new to you, as it was for me when I first encountered Jesus. What is clear is that wherever we are at, the invitation for us to abide in him is to all of us. And that is the good news. Earlier in the talk, I asked you to think about the effect of the groups you are in on you. Does it give you fun or confidence or a sense of being known? Just think for a minute about the effect of being in Jesus. The authority, confidence, sense of being, value, honored, being looked after, fed and nurtured. Being in Jesus transcends anywhere else we might be. We could be in prison. We could be on holiday. We could be with all our loved ones. We could be separated from our loved ones. Being in Jesus transcends everything. So how do you connect to Jesus? that source of love daily and allow that culture to feed, change, and grow you. Because that's what we're all invited to do. The rest, the fruit, is the produce of that connection. Just this week, I met up with a friend who is a Buddhist, and we often talk about our faiths. And she speaks at her Buddhist meetings, and I said, "Oh, I'm speaking on Sunday." And she said, "Oh, what are you speaking about?" I find it so clarifying to talk to somebody who doesn't have the same faith about what you're talking about, to try and explain it in terms that don't sound weird. So I said, "Well, you know, knowing, because we live in Southwest London, where productivity is a really big deal. You know, everybody's, you know, trying to have the biggest something." And so I just kind of tried to put it in that analogy, and I said, "Well, it's the spiritual concept of, if we live in Jesus, that the produce of our life isn't our responsibility. Our responsibility is to be in him. It's about really what we're responsible for and what we're not. And what we're responsible for is to be in Jesus, and the fruit will come and the produce will come." Well, that was a conversation stopper for her. It was an interesting, challenging, counterculture concept for all of us. So wherever we are at, the invitation is to abide in his love. That is our only job. Sounds like a really good deal to me.